news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right? All right!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord. It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
Oh, hi. What's your name?
David.
David, huh?
You're being redundant.
Redundant? Well, that's a big word for such a little guy.
Don't refer to me as a little guy. I'm a 12-year-old male.
I'm sorry. I just meant...
Well, friends and I were in an accident.
I know.
We're the only survivors.
I bet your mother and father are going to be glad to hear that you're okay.
It was quite frightening. Crash in the middle of nowhere. Because of my ingenuity, we survived.
I see.
We're on our way to Hollywood when it happened.
Oh, so you're an actor.
Among other things. The group and I were going to make a movie.
I see. Well, that must be fascinating.
Green's a lovely color. Don't you think it goes with my eyes?
So?
Nice material, poor stuff. Gotta go now, Mr.
Beckman. Harvey Beckman.
We will be friends, Harvey Beckman.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 157, Devil Times 5.
Devil Times 5. I don't remember that on the multiplication tables, do you?
No.
So, because 5 times 5 is 25, right?
Yeah, that much we know.
Yeah. And 25 times 5 is 125.
Yes.
So the devil is 666. So, right?
Yes.
So what's 666 times 5? So I'm putting on the spot, aren't I?
Yes, you are. I don't know.
Anyway, that's a little mathematics to start the podcast. Actually, I want to start the podcast by asking you, how are you doing? How are you, Chris?
I'm doing very well. And how are you?
I'm doing just fine.
This is an unorthodox beginning to the show.
I know. And the reason why I'm doing this is because as we're recording this, it's, I guess you say, early to mid-December. And the season is upon us, the Christmas season. I'm starting to feel the spirit. The snow is starting to fall. The trees are coming out. The lights. There's that feeling in the air, that Christmas. You know, people seem to be a little bit more festive. You know, all that stuff. And of course, you know, whenever we have these holidays, these are hallmarks and they bring back memories, whether it be something auditory or olfactory or tactile or what have you, they bring back memories. And for many people, the Christmas season brings memories, both good and bad. I mean, you know, let's not mince words. For some, the Christmas season is it's the most wonderful time of the year. For some people, it's the complete opposite. It's the worst time of the year. Some people, I mean, there's no, it's no accident that suicide rates do rise exponentially in the month of December. But, you know, not being a religious person and not coming from a culture that even celebrates Christmas, I've always enjoyed the season. But that's not the memory that's coming to me right now. The memory that's coming to me is this. 2 years ago, I'm not going to say 2 years ago to the date because I don't know the exact date, but 2 years ago, mid-December, you sat where you're sitting right now, and you asked me that very same question. How are you, Jeff? And I said, just fine. How are you, Chris? And that was when we recorded our very first ever episode of the Really Awful Movies podcast.
Wow, an auspicious day.
Your Hunter from the Future. That 11 and a half minute episode, which I cringe with embarrassment when I listen to now. But that was the day. You know, it was mid-December that we sat down and we recorded your... And I believe our second episode was Land of Doom. And our third episode was From Beyond, and on and on and on. And these were short episodes 2 years ago. And so we're coming up on the two-year anniversary of the Really Awful Movies podcast. We didn't broadcast the first episode until, I believe it was either December 31st or January 1st. It was right around the new year. So that's going to be the official two-year anniversary. But the actual beginning of it all, when we sat down and turned on the recorder for the first time, 2 years ago. And so I'm reminiscing a bit. And as I recall, we didn't know what the fuck we were doing.
Ergo, we only some had... would argue we still don't.
Well, yeah, I mean,
no, no, we've honed our craft a little more. And if you've noticed, as longtime listeners to the show, we never, ever ask how one another is.
Mm-hmm.
Because after, I think, even before I think we started our episodes, I said, you know what really irks me about podcasts is people who start launching into their own personal business and ask how one another is. So we've gone 2 years and we've bookended this 2 year period mm-hmm. with how are yous, but in between we've completely ignored them.
But that's the hilarious thing, because you did say that before we started.
Oh my God, it was cringeworthy.
And yet, as soon as I press play, how are you, Jeff?
Yeah.
Just fine. How are you, Chris? Welcome to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of low budget cinema.
Yeah. No,
but anyway, 2 years have gone by. Now we're recording episode number, what is this?
157.
We've talked a lot, man.
We have indeed.
Like think of all that and just like convert it to minutes. How many minutes we've spent talking to each other about movies.
Oh my God, I don't even want to think about it, but there is a website that tells you how many hours old you are.
Okay.
And how many days and all that, and that's pretty disturbing as well. So, mm-hmm. And then it'll tell you, it'll ballpark based on your little background you input when you're going to pass as well. So, but yeah, when you think about these stats of how long you spend in traffic, there's always that one, how long you spend in sleep, mm-hmm. a third of your life.
How long you've been waiting in line.
Oh my God, yeah.
But when you think about how many hours you spend talking to each other, how many hours you spend watching the movies, we have devoted a good chunk of this last few
yeah,
years to this podcast, but...
This almost sounds like a coda. We are going
to
continue.
No, exactly. Yeah. I didn't want this to sound like a coda. This is just a reflection based upon the season. But I don't regret it for the world. I mean, it's been a blast. And
for sure.
It's going to continue to be a blast. And as we continue doing this, we continue discovering more and more interesting movies, such as today's movie, which was actually a recommendation. We always say, if you recommend a movie to us, we will do our utmost to podcast it. And this was a recommendation.
Yes, so on the theme of twos, sometimes called the terrible twos, if it's in relation to kids, but this would be the terrific twos, because this would be our second recommendation from Twitter that we followed up on directly, and we are working on our second book, so two is hopefully auspicious mm-hmm. here. This is courtesy of someone in the Pacific Northwest, I wish I could remember where, but it's DM Elms, who reacted to a tweet I did about the excellent otherworldly creature feature called Snow Beast,
mm-hmm.
and they said to us, Devil times five. This is a must-see, basically. I can't remember the gist of the back and forth. And to me, Devil times five sounds like a bonanza sheriff going into an Arizona town. Like, it sounds like a Western. And I thought, what is this? And then I started to look it up.
Right, thinking like Cutthroat's Nine or something?
I don't know. It just doesn't sound like a horror film, like, especially one with children. It has no... I just thought someone, you know, this town ain't big enough for the both of us, that kind of thing. A devil rides off into the sunset. And then I realized this...
Devil and Miss Jones?
There's lots of devils.
That's not a Western.
No, true enough. Although that has a little bit of similarity with this movie, because I did not know what to expect when I saw this. And mm-hmm. not only did not know what to expect, but I also didn't realize I own this.
Yeah. Really? Is it part of that fable?
It is.
The lecture we talked about?
The gift that keeps on giving, the Mill Creek.
Yeah.
And also, this was recently, I guess, transferred onto a Blu-ray by Code Red, which I found out about 2 hours ago.
Really?
Which thrills me to bits, because I enjoyed this debacle immensely. And
as did I.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Devil Times 5 from 1974. This is one in a long litany of Killer Kids movies. Just a small sample. Now, you know, The Bad Seed was one of the, I guess, well, perhaps one of the first. I believe that was 1956. We have films like The Offspring, of course, The Brood, The Pit, which we podcasted that one. Excellent, yeah. The Omen, Bloody Birthday,
Children of the Corn,
So many more. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Killer Kids.
Yeah.
There's something about kids which is inherently sinister. And you and I, we are not parents.
Not that we know of, no.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
So is one of the reasons why we don't have kids because we find them evil and sinister? I don't know.
Yeah, it's just, jeez. It's just, again, upending and subverting expectations of how people are meant to behave. And nothing...
I'm not even talking about killer baby movies. Like it's a
oh, yeah, that's which this. We're going to get to, of course. Yeah, this is... but also, it takes the killer kid genre, which people are inherently, I guess, frightened of, and mixes it with the home invasion genre, which I don't think I've ever seen in this context. I mean, teenagers maybe storm in and do brutalize, but these are little kids.
There is a wonderful home invasion movie. It's a foreign film, and I believe it's from out of Sweden, but don't quote me on that because I don't know it for a fact. I could Google it right now, but I'm not going to bother. And perhaps this was, in some weird way, influenced by Devil Times 5, because Devil Times 5 is pretty fucking ridiculous. This one that I'm going to talk now is a solid movie, a solid home invasion movie where the perpetrators are young kids. They wear masks, almost like a juvenile version of this. Was it The Strangers, that movie with Mila Jovovich and... Anyhow, this was a movie called... the translation was Them, but it's Ils, I-L-S, Ils. Mm-hmm. And it's an incredibly terrifying, taut home invasion movie where a couple is terrorized by a bunch of young kids who are invading their home with homicidal intent. And what makes that movie so scary is there's no actual reason given for why the kids are acting the way they do. Oftentimes, we need to be given a reason, because that provides a bit of...
context, yeah. Huh?
Context, but not just that. A little bit of, you know, reassurance or sucker, whatever. You know, like, oh, he was abused, or oh, you know, this, or oh, that, and that. I can understand why such and such. I mean, I think of a movie called We Have to Talk About Kevin, which was a portrait of... it's a horrific movie, not a horror movie, starring Tilda Swinton, and it's a portrait of a child who ended up committing horrific acts of violence, and they then go sort of backwards and examine his, parental upbringing, how his father treated him, how his mother treated him, how they sort of swept the obvious signs under the rug. You know, that exam, and that's good. I like those, you know, sort of portrait ups, you know, Henry portrait of a serial killer sort of thing.
Another invasion type movie. A very prominent scene is a home invasion there, but not strictly a home invasion movie.
But although, even with Henry, there's not a lot of backstory given to Henry. I mean, there's a lot of unreliable narrator in there, but we don't really get a definitive backstory as to who Henry is. I'm sort of going off on a tangent, but what I'm trying to say is that in this movie, the only thing that's explained is that they were escapees from, Children's Mental Sanitarium Hospital.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, this is a product of the 70s. This is goofy. This is just bizarre as hell. There's some really, really what the fuck moments. And one of the indicators always of a movie being batshit crazy is that it has multiple titles. AKA. And this is a movie that has a lot of AKAs. For example, People Toys. I don't understand the title. I guess because they're toying with them in the house?
Well, yeah. Makes more sense. Well,
No, but I like Devil Times 5, because there's five of them, right? There are five kids. These kids were devils.
Right? Well, there's many bones to pick, but yeah.
Okay. Tantrums was another title. The Horrible House on the Hill.
Too much like House on Haunted Hill. And
I even think it was at the very end of the credits, usually before the credits, they show the title. It said The Beginning. Did you see that?
Yeah, did. I did see that.
What was that all about?
I don't know.
Another alternate title that's slipped in the credits?
But I guess this is the work of many hands, some of whom disavowed themselves from the finished product.
Well, everyone's the work of many hands.
Directorially speaking, I should say. Alan Smithy accepted here, but I think there was two. One person, if I'm not mistaken, shot a bunch of footage that was, I guess you want to say, finished off by his successor. And that's how the finished product has resulted in something so indelibly strange and bizarre. Actually, I gotta confess, I rewatched the opening scene about 4 or 5 times because we're introduced to a couple, and then there's a cut to a van, and they're going on a road trip. Mm-hmm. And I was under the impression when I was first watching it that it was the couple that got into the accident in the van, which they did not. So I rewatched it several times, and then I noticed that the driver was somebody else. And then if you're watching very closely, you find that the van was leaving the gates in tiny font of what was a sanitarium. Sanatorium? What's the difference?
Sanitarium.
A sanitarium, okay. One sounds like a house for the... Metallica. One's a hospice for the aged, and the other's for the mentally ill. I don't know the difference. Anyway, you have to be paying attention because... And other people have said this online too. Like, you don't know what exactly is happening, and you don't see the kids in the van for reasons of shoddy filmmaking. All you see them is, once the van crashes, they're poking about and taking the money of the driver and saying, are they all dead? But you don't know that they're there, necessarily. They seem unscathed.
Well, okay, but, yes, okay, first of all, we have this couple, and Rick and, I believe, and Julie. And they're heading up to Julie's father, you gotta love the name, Papa Doc.
Yeah, like the Haitian dictator. Papa Doc Duvalier? That's who I like. What is there, like, none?
Or the delicious Indian cracker, like,
you know. Papa Dom?
Papa Doc, yeah, Papa Doc. Papa Docs were some sort of... There's Papa Doc, you know, he's one of these patriarchs that rules over with an iron fist.
Yeah.
Businessman, everybody sort of cowers in fear. They don't know what to
say
to
Papa Doc. It's a kowtow to him. He's the man.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And this Rick, he's not only the paramour of Papa Doc's daughter, he also works for Papa Doc. And they're heading up to this, I guess, chalet.
Yeah, there's lots of guesswork. Yeah.
So what I understand is when we first meet them, they're in sunny, what is it? It looks like sunny Los Angeles.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's even...
they are in California, yeah.
Yeah, they're in California. There's a meteorological report talking about, it's 76 degrees in the shade. And then, but if you go to the very creatively named Snow Mountain.
Yeah.
You know, I love the literalism there. Mm. Things are going to get a little
hairy, yeah.
And not only that, but right away they explain away, you know, a lot of the things that might hinder a plot of this from going forward.
Yeah, of course.
There's heavy winds, power lines are being knocked out.
Yeah, 10 feet of snow.
No phone service.
Yeah.
Now, two questions. Number one, because you're the geography man, like, do they have locales like snowy climbs that are literally like 2 hours away from a place of 76 degrees?
I'm guessing if you go high enough, like once you hit 10,000 feet, mm-hmm. there's got to be its own, you know, climate up there. You can hella ski. I think California has skiing. But yeah, it just added to the level of confusion about this, because you're mentioning that Papa Doc was the patriarch of some murky business. Like, mm-hmm. they don't really say what he does, although he talks about how he's going to open a facility. We can only presume this meeting is with some hospital administrators to open another facility of the type that would house these kids. Like, there's so many questions. I don't know either. Some people called him a mobster, so I'm trying to fit, like, I'm doing post hoc reading about who they are, because this thing is so confusing. I did rewatch it several times in the beginning to figure out who and why and how. Like, these are the 4 W's of journalism. Like, where, when, what, like, why are they all there in the mountains? Mm-hmm. And who are all these people? How do they relate? Well, apart from one of them, they relate.
Is another employee of Papa Doc. He's an attorney by the name of Harvey Beckman. Oh, Harvey Beckman, sorry. I was thinking Harvey Birdman, attorney at law. Do you remember that? That old cartoon?
No.
Good
night, Harvey Beckman.
Yeah, and he was played by an unrecognizable...
Oh, really. To me, for sure. Yeah, again, this is after-the-fact research.
Yeah, post-priori, you know, you check out, who was in this movie? And you see this picture of Boss Hogg. You know, the unmistakable visage of Boss Hogg from Dukes of Hazzard. Sorrel Brooks, the guy who played Boss Hogg, he played Harvey... Brecken.
Yeah, yeah, the man in the Colonel Sanders white shining suit on it. Like, We both love that show, and it's like them Duke boys were in a lot of trouble, and it's Uncle Jesse. It's like I probably saw every episode.
I used to slide, shimmy in and out of my father's car window all the time. I really did, man.
That is amazing.
Open that window, I'm coming in, you know. I was small enough to do so.
Oh my God! Yeah, and Boss Hogg was, of course, like the the corrupt villain sheriff of the county of Hazard, who would go after these two young kids.
Those darn Duke boys, those damn darn Duke boys, are really moonshiners, you know, bootleggers, what have you, with Uncle Jesse and. Of course, Roscoe P. Coltrane. It was just a great show. I mean,
unbelievable.
Okay, you know, Prophet's Time, you know, they generally had the Confederate flag on it, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, that show was just, it was a rip-roaring good time.
Oh, and how many bridges could that thing scale? Say, the transmission on that car has got to be off the charts.
It didn't loop over some sort of bridge. It was, I loved it. Loved it. Bo and Luke Duke. But, yeah, unrecognizable. Completely unrecognizable. You would not recognize that that was the man who was in that Colonel Sanders regalia. So they're going up to this mountain. Yes, you mentioned the crash, and it's a short bus, a yellow school bus. And, you know, the short bus has become a euphemism for the
differently
bus.
Challenged.
Yeah, yeah. They have, did you take the short bus to school?
Yeah, did you wear a hockey helmet and you weren't on a team? You know,
like, these kids really should have been riding the short bus because they're coming from out of a sanatorium. Hmm. And they are, I guess, there's five of them. One of them, played by burgeoning teen idol Leif Garrett. This Leif Garrett, he was a teen idol in the 70s, and he appeared in a few movies, a couple of genre movies. I mean, he was in Walking Tall, the first one. Not the sequels that starred our mutual fave, Bo Svenson, but the original Walking Tall with the incredible Joe Don Baker. He was also in a movie that you reviewed for our site way back when called Cheerleader Camp.
Yes.
But he was mostly known for two things. He's had some disco songs, and we had a minor hit called I Was Made for Dancing.
Yeah, and I think he covered, like, Lay Your Head on My Shoulder, which is, I believe, a Paul Anka, like, a sappy love song. Yeah, he was a teen idol, actor, double threat. Could he dance, too? I don't know.
But the other thing that Leif Garrett is known for, or Leif Garrett, is his substance abuse problems. Mm. One of the most popular episodes of Behind the Music dealt with Leif Garrett. Nobody could believe what had become of this guy. I mean, I'm surprised he never made it out to Celebrity Rehab because and the funny thing too is that in 2007, he actually put out a comeback record, and this record sold less than 300 copies.
Oh no.
So it just goes to show how the mighty can fall. Wow. But the mighty Leif Garrett is in this movie. He plays one of the devils. And it's really four kids, and I guess you would call her their guardian of sorts.
Yeah, their protector. She's
also
matriarch.
Young, and she's a nun. Hmm. A nun. But the question is she really a nun? Is she really a woman of cloth? At one point, they ask her, you look a little young to be a nun. She mentions being a novice, always wearing sunglasses. Interestingly enough about this nun is that she was the underage girlfriend of the second director of the film. And she was also an albino.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of the shawl she's wearing, the glasses, were there to hide her albinoism.
Hmm.
You seem lost in thought.
His sister was also in the film, too, who played the younger kid, who was about half the size of, I think, the greatest character in this fivesome, who would be the little general. Mm-hmm. What was his name there?
I don't recall his name.
Yeah, but he was just great. Like, he speaks in all the military ease, like AWOL and CO for commanding officer. Yeah. And he says stuff like negative, affirmative, and he salutes. And it's a great conceit.
He was this little black kid, and he was dressed in fatigues, combat fatigues. And he was, all of his vernacular was in that, it was in military jargon.
Yeah.
What have you, parlance of the military. But you also mentioned the Leif Garrett. I'm going to call him Leif.
Sure.
The Leif Garrett sister. So was his mother.
Oh, jeez. Who was that?
She was lovely.
Oh, wow.
She
was lovely as well, yeah.
She was lovely. Yeah. Lovely was another daughter of Papa Doc's, who was there. She was a bit of a... She's supposed to be the sex symbol of the film. And there's another character we've got to talk about, and this is slow-witted Ralph. Another observation. why are the caretakers in these movies always slow-witted? Yeah. You know, Ralph is the caretaker of the Papadoc estate, and or the Papadoc chalet or villa, and, you know, they're only there when they come up there for, you know, vacation, so he's the one that stays there 365 days a year, doing menial chores, et cetera, et cetera. He's also the first victim of these kids when they finally do come upon the house.
Well, he's the first victim of any sort, because he is... Ooh, geez.
That was not Ralph. I thought that was Ralph. I know we're going
to
talk about
it. No, I meant victim as in... although, we're going to get to that, too, because I was very confused. I have a lot of questions for you, but he was a victim of another sort, if you want to put it this way.
Oh,
he was somewhat, I think, sexually abused.
You're talking about the sexual taunting by Lovely.
By Lovely, yeah. And this guy is clearly... probably low IQ, maybe 60, 70, menial worker, and she presses him as to whether he's ever been with a woman, and he doesn't know what she's talking about. He has his pet rabbits. It's almost like, you know,
very Lenny-like.
Yeah, Lenny-like, he's more about petting his rabbits and doing household chores and all this stuff, and she asks him, oh, have you ever been with a woman? And then she gets him to take off his top and his pants, mm-hmm. and it's this, and she's laughing at it, and it's so 70s in a way, like the weird sexual undertones and just oddness. You mentioned Sweden earlier, because I know that's going to come up as well. This has elements of a Swedish sex film in it too. So, yeah, that came out of the blue, and yeah, bizarre tone all over the map.
Well, there's one part that we're going to talk about soon that's so tonally. I mean, oh my God, if you want to talk about a scene that seems like it came from another movie altogether, it's coming, and we're going to get to it. But the other thing I was going to say about Ralph is that why is it that those that are two slices short of a full loaf in movies are always named Ralph? Not always, but often. Yeah. Look at Crazy Ralph in the Friday 13 series. It seems to be Ralph, Ralphie, Ralphus. It just seems to be the name for these, you know, slow-witted people.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. But yeah, so this short bus crashes. The driver's dead, but the kids survive miraculously. I don't think it was explicitly stated, but I'm sure they caused the crash.
Yeah.
So as to escape,
yeah.
We don't know where they were. We know where they were coming from. We don't know where they were being taken to. We do know that there was an older gentleman in hot pursuit because he knew what these kids were capable of doing. He looked to be maybe a priest, and he was trying to get to these kids because he knows what their homicidal intent. But he ends up succumbing to the elements. Yeah, that's the thing too.
Just speculation too, because I didn't know who he was, and I was going to text you, and then I thought, oh, we're just going to discuss it here. Like, yeah, maybe he was a Monsignor, maybe he was just some high level ranking, like sanitarium official, maybe he was some law enforcement. Like, and regarding Ralph and his non demise, as we should see, like, I don't know who the victims are in this film, and I didn't know that the kids necessarily perpetrated the accident, in air quotes, if it was an accident. Like, there's so many...
No, we don't know.
It's so shoddily constructed.
Well, you know, I mean, hey, not in movies, sometimes a little ambiguity is good. I mean, some of my favorite movies have, you know, ambiguity.
Yeah, well, a bugbear of ours in Don't Go in the Woods, .. alone, was that people would just emerge as if dropped in from on high. Mm-hmm. They would get killed, and at least you knew what they were and who they were, mm-hmm. to the extent that they were hikers. And then you figure, okay,
yeah.
In the woods, you're a hiker, you die, so what? You don't care? But these were legit people. I didn't know who they were, why they were killed, or what they were doing there. Like,
I surmised, and I think that the movie made enough implications for me to infer that they were going on some sort of outing, some sort of field trip, maybe to the zoo or something. I don't know what.
Yeah.
Maybe to ski. Who the hell? Well,
who knows? The whole thing.
But the reality is that these were homicidal kids. So I'm sure, I am positive that they caused the accident. And what an accident, too, because
the roll.
Short bus rolls and rolls, mm-hmm. and it's great seeing buses roll down hills.
Mm-hmm.
But this was interminable. This thing went on for at least well, 7 or 8 minutes.
What a great segue, because the apotheosis of interminable has to be this.
Yes.
Oh my God, that theme song. I was humming it on my way walking here today. I could not take it. I was whistling it for 2 straight days.
Do you realize what you're whistling?
What is that?
Head, shoulders, knees.
A little bit of London Bridge.
At the beginning, I thought it was London Bridge. But then I realized, and there's so many variations thereof, and I'm going to talk about that too later on. But yeah, the movie, I'm like, wait a second.
I'm tormented by that. That's sitting with me for days.
Yeah, because when the movie begins, and we see Rick and Julie driving, and it's being played in a recorder.
Yeah.
That fucking plastic instrument that gave me away
in the air before. Hey, I had a wooden one.
Oh, you had a wooden one?
I was all fancy.
I was head and shoulder. Anyway. Another thing I want to talk about Rick, too, because he's meant to be, you know, the good-looking...
Yeah, he's the Lothario, like, playboy.
He looked like an aged Harry... Well, not an aged, but the man is aged now. He looked like Terry Bradshaw.
Oh, my God, yeah.
He was just a balding, mustachioed, blonde
kind of... Oh, yeah, I was going to say one of the members of the Four Horsemen.
Arn Anderson.
Yeah,
I know Arn Anderson, him too. And it's funny because, he had a balding pate, and at one point they're all sitting around the dinner table, and Nan actually comments on how healthy his hair is. Is that some sort of ironic?
Yeah, I don't know. I rewatched that too. I watched this twice in the span of 4 days.
I was just like, sorry for you.
No, I was mesmerized by it. Like the first time I was sort of dismissive, and then I was catching on all these little subtleties. It just made this just so delicious. Mm-hmm. But not only that, not just the subtleties, but just the glaring holes in my understanding of this. So I'm interested to hear you fill in my gaps in understanding, because my God, there's so much that I still have questions about. And this may warrant a third viewing.
So they cause the accident. That's what I...
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah.
And they escape, and for some reason they are all unscathed, even though this van rolled about 55 miles down the hill, and they manage to all crawl out from the wreckage without one scratch. And they then want to find shelter. And I think, these kids came from... The actual place they came from is the P. Brown State Mental Hospital Children's Ward. And they all have homicidal intent. And they come upon Papa Doc's chalet. Now, I don't know how the Monsignor got word that they were...
Going there,
loose,
yeah.
There's everywhere. There was no communication. Phones were out. This is obviously pre-cell phone. Maybe there's CB. I don't know how, but somehow he knew. And instead of using some sort of conveyance to go after the kids, he's on foot. Now, earlier they also mentioned that there's this huge storm, but there was no storm. Everything looked to be pretty...
Well, let's just say there are varying levels of the white stuff, depending on the scene, which is fine. It's a low-budget film.
He succumbs to the elements, and they come to this home where Rick, Julie, Papa Doc, Harvey, Harvey's souse wife Ruth, lovely, are assembling for
whatever it is they're doing.
Whatever it is they're doing. We don't know. We do know that they always say, we gotta talk about business. I'm not gonna talk about business. So there's some sort of, I wanted to ask Papa Doc for a promotion. Harvey is like, he's a man with, he wants to make demands, but he's too afraid to. But ultimately, this being a killer kid movie, it's going to come down to the kids offing the members of this clan, or this assembled, one by one. And some of these deaths were really awesome and creative, and some were just completely anticlimactic. But we have to talk about, now we're going to talk about that one scene, the scene, I would say the centerpiece of this movie, which was so tonally, because this is a goofy movie. It's a goofy movie. There's some ridiculous lines. So, I mean, the army character, he's complete. You can't take that kid seriously. Yeah. The kids didn't really ever seem threatening. Some of the things they said, some of the lines, for example, I believe at one point, Leaf says, you ruined my beautiful face. Like, it's just weird.
Okay, all right. Well, I would argue there's many centerpieces of this film, but if we're going to go there... Papa Doc is the kind of almost the James Bond villain, and he has, if this is the centerpiece you're talking about, he has odd pets up at this chalet. Is this not the scene? Okay.
I'm talking about the incongruous slow motion, protracted black and white
bludgeoning. It went on psychedelic black and white forever.
The weird psychedelic. A weird psychedelic soundtrack with an animalistic noise, something that seemed like it would come out of the work of like your Buttergeit, it was horrendously disturbing. We see the kids actually
bashing the guy's limbs, whoever this was, and you're going to tell me who this was?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. Come on, damn you.
At first, I thought it was Ralph. I thought, maybe the director said, impressionistic, and they went to the barn and they met Ralph and they decided to bludgeon Ralph, but we're seeing them hitting him with hammers and shovels and
yeah, it was a pitchfork maybe at one time. Yeah, it was all murky.
Oh my lord, it was so nihilistic, and it was, you know, at least a dozen bashes with a hammer. They took chains. They were whipping this guy with chains. They hit him in the hand with a hammer. He would let out blood curdling screams. After what seemed like a half an hour of this, it was very unsettling. One of the kids asks, "Is he dead yet?"
And yeah, and the army rugrat says, "We got to move the body or something."
Well, nobody else says, "I sure hope so." I'm like, "Yeah, I'm right." This guy was just hit with chains,
yeah,
pitchforks, hammers, etc., in the head. But then later on, when Harvey bites it, and what he gets is a axe to the neck, essentially decapitation. It's completely bloodless. There's a cutaway. Yeah. There's nothing. There is one cool kill. Well, two. Two cool kills. And then one of the cool kills is the one you're going to talk about, and this is the demise of the lovely demise of Lovely.
Yeah, well, I don't know. If you had a ski chalet, I don't know. Would you? Is that where you would store your vicious tropical fish? like, presumably these things need to be fed, unless Ralph is up there year-round. And again, we have many questions.
No, he is there year-round.
Oh, okay, I see.
That was said.
Okay, so you're entrusting the care of this highly complicated whatever, tropical jungle fish to this slow-witted guy. Fine, fair enough. The evil Papa Doc, I always want to say Papa John, like the pizza chain, the shitty pizza chain.
I'm still thinking Papa
Don,
but anyway.
Either one, and he actually explains to the kids that he uses his goldfish as bait for what the kids describe as these ugly things, and for the piranha, as he calls them, which is the proper Portuguese pronunciation, piranha. And like, it's just so weird. Well, they use these fish, the kids, to murder this woman while she's taking a bath. And that was really, for a winter movie, I did not expect someone to meet their maker via piranha.
Mm. But that scene was hilarious because first they attempted, the nun comes in and
shoves her head underwater.
It's
like a changeling or something.
Around her. Then they release the piranha. When the kids comes in, pours the piranha and goes from a bucket into the bathroom. Then you see Lovely thrashing around. But it's shot just enough so there was no nudity in this movie. I don't believe.
A little bit. Little bit with the wrestling scene. Again, the parallels to Swedish porn.
But then you see the aftermath of this, and there's no sign of Lovely. We were meant to assume she was eaten to the bone, but what it looks like in the bathtub is SpaghettiOs. Like someone just poured like canned spaghetti in the bathtub. Now, I guess I would say that was maybe the second best kill of the movie. The best kill, you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, well, it's a swinging good time. Is it that kill?
Yeah,
the swinging good time. Oh, my God. There's several kills, and they seem to be, if you want to say he's the ringleader, this mini general, he seems to be the guy who's got...
I think the sense it was actually Leif Garrett's character.
Oh, so he's the leader, but he's the one who's carrying out the deeds because of his technical skills. At one point, he, fixes up a motor to string someone up by. He's got, you know, incredible abilities. He shoots guns. Geez, where am I going with this? He ambushes. Who is it? Rick?
No, Rick.
One of the
Rick
survivors.
Was the guy that got caught in the bear traps near the end.
And okay. Well, he sets up a swing to ambush to one of the adults who's coming up the stairs. And I was going to ask you,
Julia.
I was going to ask you again. Like, is he's swinging, which obviously is not going to produce a fatal blow of any kind. Mm-hmm. But he's got some sharp object that he's swinging with to swing into them using. It's the force of gravity, whatever. What was that?
A couple knives.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So many questions.
They took these kids in because they saw a group of five kids lost in the, you know, elements in the wintertime, and they took pity on them. Not so much Papa Doc, because he was sort of remorseless sort of guy. And one of the girls, I don't know if she was feigning it or actually was ill. But then, you know, they paid the price because they were getting off one by one by these increasingly ludicrous ways. Again, that bludgeoning scene, that psychedelic, weird, trippy, black and white, which is really brutal, had nothing to do with... I mean, it was. I guess it was there to establish the homicidal intent of these kids, and it was something they might have done prior. But
I was going to say is that it might have been a flashback.
Exactly, but so, we don't know. It was the way it was edited. It was haphazardly edited in. There was no. It was just there, and it was like, well, like I don't understand. What's it doing here? And it was so incongruous to the rest of the film, both tonally and just in its placement.
Structurally, yeah.
And but anyhow, ultimately, that's the crux of the film. It's the kids killing the denizens of the house. Papa Duck gets it. Everyone gets it. Papa Duck is made into a human snowman near the end. It's weird. It's weird, wild, and wacky. It's just a bizarre movie. And again, product of the 70s. Yet again, I'm going to talk about Scott here, but all the horror movies in the 70s, downbeat endings.
Hmm.
This one too, downbeat ending. Weird. You have a leading man who looks, well, I guess, as we say, like it's a pejorative, but hey, this is the 70s. He looks like a 70s porn star. Yeah. That's what they look like in the 70s. He was a balding man, mustachioed.
Yeah, and there's protracted shots. Like he's kind of orange-complected, obviously fake and baked tan, and this protracted scene of his bare white ass
as he sits on the end of... Donald Trump is a president-elect, that orange...
That's going to fall out of favor?
No, I think that's going to come back.
I think that those days died with the Jersey Shore,
okay.
Or maybe died literally from skin cancer. But yeah, a very weird-looking guy. And the way he was sitting on the edge of the bed, it was almost
why
like...
Why is Donald Trump orange?
I don't know. I don't know, but...
Ever since he now named Linda McMahon to his cabinet, I'm just like, this. I've gone from anger to absolute amusement. And
I was going to say, this is an aside, but Vince Neil, mutual favorite, because we like Motley Crue, wow. Again, sending it back to the, he's going to appear.
Favorite is really stressing
out. Okay. Yeah. His troll-like self is going to appear on the Schwarzenegger-hosted new episode of The Apprentice.
Because he was uninvited to perform at the inauguration. Hey, did you see the video where Vince Neil was drinking with Nicolas Cage and he ended up assaulting that...
I did indeed. And for a guy who... Oh, I was going to say, there's no precedent for this, but there is, because Ted Kennedy. But for someone who killed someone with their car, mm-hmm. He certainly made a good career after that. And my God, he got killed. Yeah, and now he's back as if nothing happened. He's a humble dad. Anyway, this guy.
I love the fact that Linda McMahon is now in the cabinet. Life has become Idiocracy.
True. Well,
about Mike Judge, the guy made Beavis and Butthead. He made a satirical film 10 years ago called Idiocracy, talking about what the world will be like when everybody loses all semblance of sense and intellect, and life has turned into... I got to rewatch Idiocracy and realize, and just to, because it's been a while since I've seen it. It's one of our good friend Lewis from Social Media, one of his favorite movies, and I have to watch it and note all the parallels. Sadly, it's so sad when some of these social satires come to fruition, and it has. I am.
Well, in her defense, at least she runs a billion-dollar enterprise.
Okay, but how much?
Yeah, no, I know.
Okay, like, the WBF.
The fact that he was in the WWE, mm-hmm. I think that should disqualify you from all higher office, any association with the WWE.
Well, some is arguing Jesse Ventura, but
no, that exactly. That association is almost on par with any of the major transgressions he's committed.
The fact that
like it's so
exactly.
tacky, it's like and awful, like on every level.
Really bad.
Yeah.
You're in the WWF Hall of Fame. That's and now you're the president-elect. That's really fucking bad.
Yeah. That's really crazy.
Okay.
This guy in this movie who I liken to, you know, Arn Anderson.
Sorry political.
His butt. Like, and I wouldn't ordinarily notice such a thing, but it was, like, the way it was positioned on the edge of the bed, like, this weird white butt, like, it was so bizarre, like, and also, like, the Swedish porn aesthetic that this thing had, was it Lovely and Ruth? The two of them get into a wrestling match because we find out that this man who's got this legendary head of hair,
exactly.
Which is just completely just, I mean...
I had him
sparse.
Before you, and I could have many.
Yeah,
yeah. That was.
That,
no,
that was
the
gauntlet thrown
it was
down.
Lovely.
Like I've had.
Truly.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I've had your hubby, and then they get into it, and they roll around on the floor. This was the woman who had previously tried to bed this slow-witted gentleman. But yeah, they get onto it on the floor. She's naked. Like they're fighting over this ape. This orange ape, because again the standards are just so. That was so bewildering. The lovemaking, the 70s decor, this the weirdness, the atonality, the sexual undertones. Like, this movie is a product of its time. And, again, we've talked about this with Sinful Dwarf. How in God's name would a movie like this be made today? Like, it's not like mores have changed so much from the 70s. Maybe a little bit regarding drinking and driving, but it's still post-civil rights era. Like, it seemed modern. It doesn't seem so far away that this would happen, because this did not happen so much in the 80s either, right? Like, this was a weird 70s sexual thing. Am I reading too much into it?
What was a weird 70s sexual thing?
This seduction of Ralph was beyond bizarre.
Okay.
And it's so odd. Okay. Like, and it would be odd if this were just a slasher film. It would be inappropriate and off-putting and frankly sinister. But the fact that these kids are the protagonists made it so even much more
and
weird.
The fact that the actress that who was seducing Ralph, for two of her kids were acting in this movie.
Oh my God!
Homicidal kids. It's just
You got to wonder what was going on during that production.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask you first of all, a star rating.
Oh my God! Well, I was just rather befuddled and just completely taken and. And just mesmerized by this. I'm going to give it 3.5 because it demands multiple viewings, because it looks like the product of a focus group that if they'd had 15 fewer focus groups, this would have been something good. At its core, there's a good movie. And then someone tinkered, and then someone who tinkered was tinkered with, and then more tinkering occurred, and then by the end of it, some bureaucratic mix-up ended up with this.
So forget about Citizen Kane or like the filmography of like Louis Buñuel.
Yeah, I was going to say that hallucinogenic scene might have been right out of Chien Andalou.
Or... Yeah, this is what deserves multiple viewings. Yeah. You
know? Well, no, I legitimately lots of questions I have are not answered, and what I say, I forgot what I've learned, but another. Is the classic. Mm-hmm. This is the time-honored. Whenever there's a chess scene in a movie and someone loses, then automatically you have to stand up and sweep all the pieces right off the board in disgust. That's a great movie cliche. Mm-hmm. And good night, Howard Beckman. Harvey Beckman. Great line from the movie. Harvey Beckman plays this precocious wannabe actor kid, Leif Garrett, in chess, beats him. The kid is just fantastic. Like, they're all precocious.
They're friends, Harvey Beckman.
Yeah, he's just great. Like, he kind of stole the show. Like, Leif Garrett as Davy was amazing. He's a wannabe actor. He's got this giant, I guess, 70s collar. He wears a suit everywhere. Mm-hmm. But also, his scene where he actually dresses like one of the women they're about to kill, he puts on a wig. So you get a drag scene, which... shocked me as far as kids are concerned. Not, I don't want to say as much as Sleepaway Camp, which is the pinnacle of that sort of thing, but when he had the wig on, I was shocked. Like, oh, again, spoiler.
Speaking of wigs, in a lot of the scenes, Garrett is actually wearing a wig, because this film, what happened with the directors, they had to call it back for reshoots, and he had shorn his
long, lanky
70s Farrah Fawcett-esque, whatever you are, wavy.
Yeah.
And he had to wear it was like semi cop esque. It didn't match the other scenes. It was a little shorter, a little more sandy,
different color, yeah,
brown, what have you. But yeah, I'm gonna give this one. It's definitely a what the fuck movie. It's as far as, it's not as what the fuck as, like, for example, let's say The Baby, as a movie you haven't seen. And I have to spring that upon you one of these days. But so I'm gonna give it 2.5. What did I learn? I learned this really has one of the weirdest soundtracks ever. This movie. Because with that Head and Shoulders, Knees and Toes frame, you hear it played on the recorder, you hear it played, as befitting the army kid on the horns, you hear it played on the piano, you got like these psychedelic noises, you got these animal sounds. Yeah, just really strange.
Oh, and great lines too. We got to say, like, I've never done dishes with a nun before. I mean, who among us can say they have? Just terrific stuff. Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. I was going to say, do tell. We're going to extend this podcast by a few minutes. But yeah, and just... great, fantastic, like, core group of kids. Again, like, if I was thinking about Death Weekend by William Fruitt, which is just a great home invasion movie where a guy's trying to, like, I don't know, impress this woman by going to a Ontario cottage and they get set upon by thugs. But in this movie, they're not invaded in the sense of a typical home invasion movie. They let them in, and then everything is hunky-dory at the beginning. They just figure they're a little weird, and they say, aren't you a little young to be a nun? But they invite them in with blankets and shelter and dinner. Yeah, and then they take advantage of it. So it is a little bit different, but yeah, if I had to categorize this, it's Rabid, crossed with House on the Edge of the Park, crossed with Last House on the Left, mixed with a Swedish porno, if you can call it that aesthetic.
With a little bit of different strokes. Yeah. Because that's what the Army Kid reminded me.
Taxi, the sitcom with its weird, and that just, 70s like score. It was very, very odd. And so thanks, DM Elms, because, again, didn't know what to expect, pleasantly surprised. I might get the code red transfer of this, because I was reading a blog this morning, and the differences are incredible, because, you know, it doesn't look good. It's been ravaged by time, but the pristine Blu-ray looks quite lovely, and I want to give it another shot.
Good job.
Provided it's within a reasonable price range, because by no means is this some five-star classic. But anyway, what is, arguably, is our website, www.reallyawfulmovies.com. And follow us on Twitter, awful_movies, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.